just prayed together, and it's my actual excitement to be able to continue here in Matthew 24 due to the fact that the Bible speaks pretty plainly about some things that I believe we should understand, especially in this our day, knowing in principle what happened in years back. We're going to see what's going on in our future. Now, we've already seen the last time we were together that Christ was speaking to his disciples about them being hated and them being, you know, given over to the enemy by their family and their friends, and they'd be hated by all nations, etc. And so we know that that's a real thing for us. That was for Christ's disciples. It's for us as well. Now, going into this idea of the gospel being preached to all nations, that's something that you could see was done already in the time of the early apostles. Just like there was earthquakes, there was famines, there was pestilences, there was the gospel going everywhere. They were hated, they were killed. All those things happened to those people. Yet, what's going on in Matthew 24 is it's a bigger picture as well that helps us to understand a little bit more about what is going to be on the earth, not just at the end of time, but also during the Dark Ages. Well, but it also relates to an experience which was supposed to be only about 40 years after Christ was speaking these very words. That was 2,000 years ago, and so that was with the destruction of Jerusalem. So really, in this masterful presentation of just, you know, a few verses, if you really look at the scope of the information that was being described, you have a very deep and applicable in many facets. You have an application that is available for those who can see the destruction of Jerusalem, the Middle and Dark Ages, and then, of course, the end of time with the Revelation 13 and 17 scenarios. So really, what you're seeing is a beautiful description and slash demonstration of Christ doing a presentation that has a multitude of applications, especially for us in this, our day, as we know, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So what we have is this idea of Christ presenting something that has a multitude of applications, and for us it's applicable, especially at the end of time. But what we're going to do is go into Matthew 24 now, starting in verse 15, and try to see what Christ was referring to in his relation to the book of Daniel. And I have a couple of scriptures already pulled up in different tabs, and we're going to try to go through this in a way that I think will be helpful. My desires would be that at this time. So in Matthew 24, verse 15, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation. So these people, when you shall see, so they're actually going to physically see these things, it's the abomination of desolation. Now this idea of abomination of desolation, when you look up those words together, if I were to go abomination, desolation, whoops. When you look up those words together, there are three verses that come up that use those phrases or those two words together. You have Jeremiah 44, Matthew 24, and Mark 13. So there's not really a lot of places where this idea of the abomination of desolation comes up, but we're going to see that there are other ways that the Bible refers to this as something that we can study a little bit more in depth. So when you're going to see this situation right here, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. And I think that's really interesting in that you have this concept of the something that's spoken of by Daniel that's to be understood according to Jesus. And the way that Mark refers to it in Mark chapter 13, when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let him that readeth understand, then let them be in Judea flee to the mountains. So there's an escape that needs to be happening here, according to Mark. Well, same thing happens in Matthew, we just haven't read that yet. Notice what Luke chapter 21 says, because so far I'm going to go back to Matthew. Matthew's talked about the abomination of desolation. Okay. Mark talks about the abomination of desolation. Notice what Luke says. Luke 21, when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Okay, wait a minute. They didn't say, like Matthew and Mark, Luke did not say the abomination of desolation. When he said, when you see Jerusalem compassed, know that the desolation is nigh. Okay, wait a minute. What does that mean? Well, think about this for a minute. You have the idea of Jesus speaking to these people about the abomination of desolation, recorded by Mark and Matthew. Well, Luke goes in and he doesn't use the word abomination, he uses the word Jerusalem. Okay, that's really interesting because the abomination of desolation is applicable, according to Mark and Matthew, sometime in the future. And Luke pins it down specifically to Jerusalem. So you could say that Matthew and Mark didn't use the word Jerusalem, but they did use the word abomination. And it's interesting how that Luke just went straight in and used the word Jerusalem instead of abomination. Well, what does this mean? Well, there's a lot that it could mean, of course, because normally you don't call God's people an abomination because they're God's people. They're supposed to be the holy ones on the earth, right? But what you have is, in this concept that is described in Matthew and Mark, you have this abomination idea, but then right there you have in Luke an interpretation of that abomination being Jerusalem. Okay, so God's people are called the abomination? I think so, right here, that's what it's saying. If you compare those three scriptures together, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, so what's going on here? Let's try to understand a little bit more of what's being said, because if you go and try to find what's happening with these three, Matthew, which is Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, you could see that the words, if you looked up the word abomination, you're going to find three references in the Bible, okay? In the book of Daniel, that is. The reason why is because we're actually looking at the book of Daniel, because Jesus referred to the book of Daniel in both Mark and Matthew. So Daniel 9:27, when you look up the word abomination, you find that word here. Okay, it's the overspreading of abominations. Now, we're going to look at this later, so I won't read it much more now, but if you go into the next verse, Daniel 11:31, the arms shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily, this word shouldn't be there, that's why it's italicized, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate. Okay, the abomination of desolation is what Mark and Matthew said. Remember, the abomination of desolation. But Luke specifically said Jerusalem. And if you know anything about this time setting right here, this is not during the time that Jerusalem even existed. Jerusalem had already been destroyed by this time. So this is like another application to the concept of the abomination that maketh desolate. Okay, verse 11 of chapter 12. It's the same thing. From the time that the daily sacrifice, or the daily, shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1290 days. And so here, this concept of the abomination that makes desolate is there again. But remember, this also, just like the previous chapter, chapter 11:31, those are different time frames. So what's going on with this word abomination in the book of Daniel? Well, you actually don't find a lot of those phrases in the book of Daniel with this word abomination, but you do find more of the phrase desolations or desolate. So what I'm going to do then is find the word desolate in the book of Daniel, okay? And so I've already got that pulled up right here in this one. So what I did, just to make it, you know, a little bit bigger so you can see, is I've come in and I've chosen the word desolate with an asterisk after the T. That means this word needs to be the root word, and everything afterwards, whether it's desolate, desolations, desolation, desolator, I mean, any way that it would be translated, it would be found by this asterisk. But then I set a range, which is specifically in the book of Daniel. Okay, you can choose, you can set it up the way you want, but all text is normally what I search, but you can, I've set it up to search in Romans or Hebrews, the Old Testament, Daniel, history, wisdom, prophets, Psalms, or the New Testament, etc. But that's what I'm doing here. That's why I'm able to pull that up, if you wanted to do that yourself with this program called Accordance. And by the way, I do have a tutorial on it if you're interested. So you can see that there are nine times this word is used, or the word desolate or desolations is used. First in Daniel 8:13, I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake. By the way, I did this not long ago in a verse-by-verse series through the book of Daniel with a group in Kenya, And I found something in this verse that was really quite interesting. So if that, you know, piques your interest at all, then please find the Daniel series that I did recently and go through chapter 8, and you'll see what I'm saying that I think is pretty interesting. So, how long shall the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both that sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? Okay, so here you have this concept of the daily being combined with this idea of desolation, or transgression rather, and desolation together. Okay, so Jesus called it the abomination of desolation. Daniel's calling it the transgression of desolation. But again, that's the problem, is Daniel 8 is dealing with a different time. If you know anything about Daniel 8, there's this little horn that comes up after the four horns have already been in existence. But those four horns, some of which, you know, go scatter, and then there's the 10 horns that come up, and then there's the one horn that comes up out of the 10 and pulls up three by the roots. That's a different time frame than what Jesus was referring to. Because Jesus, he was saying that when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, or where it ought not, and then Luke says when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, it'll be desolate. And you're like, wait a minute, what? What's happening? What's going on? Because he's talking about Daniel, and Daniel, we're looking at the words abomination and the words desolation. How do you connect? How do you understand what Jesus is saying? Well, the time frame needs to be right. And so Luke is the one that really gives us the clue as to what time frame we're dealing with. You could go to, like I'm going to do here, Daniel chapter 8, and look at all the starting of this concept of the transgression of desolation. So there's this little horn that comes up and messes up everything. The little horn is considered the daily there. And the transgression of desolation is to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot. Now, what's really quite interesting is that there's two sanctuaries. Let me see if I can just find it real quick. This word sanctuary, when this exceeding great horn magnified himself and the place of the sanctuary was cast down in verse 11, when I triple click this real quick, it's Mikdash. Okay, that's the word there. It's Mikdash. And if you know, I said with a Q, but it's actually with a K, the way you pronounce it. And notice that word, Mikdash, okay? Well, when the question comes in verse 13, which I'm going to go to now, and it asks, how long will it be to give both the sanctuary, which up there was Mikdash, and the host to be trodden underfoot? What word is this? Notice, when you triple click this word, it's Kodesh. This is actually a different word that's specifically for something that is holy. The other one's not. The other one's just, you know, a place that could be used as a sanctuary. But this one is holy. So there's different words here, and just like J.N. Andrews brings up, he says there are two sanctuaries that's being described here in this section. One, of course, on the earth, which is a personation of the one up in heaven. And the question comes, how long will it be that the one in heaven is trodden underfoot? The truth about the one in heaven trodden underfoot, right? So you've got two sanctuaries there. That's just a tidbit if you're interested to go and study further. But when you go into 9 verse 2, it says, I, Daniel, understood by books, whereof the word of the Jeremiah had spoken, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of what? Jerusalem. Well, wait a minute. Jesus had talked about Jerusalem being, Luke rather, had talked about Jerusalem being in the place of the word abomination compared to what Jesus had said in Mark and Matthew, the previous books of the Gospels. But here there's this desolation of Jerusalem, kind of like Luke was talking about. But again, you're having to wonder, like, okay, what time frame was this? Well, this was during the time of Babylon, right? Jerusalem was desolate during the time of Babylon. That's not during the time of Jesus, 40 years afterwards, when he says, when you shall see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. So this can't be an application either, right? So Daniel 9, verse 2, when it's talking about the desolation of Jerusalem, we're not in the same time frame as what Jesus is referring to. Look at verse 17. Now therefore, O our God, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplications, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is desolate. Wait a minute. The sanctuary that is desolate. That's like what Luke was talking about, right? The sanctuary, or Jerusalem, where the sanctuary is, that's desolate. But again, this is during the time of Babylon. It's not the same time frame that Jesus was referring to as future tense, after he had pronounced the abominations of desolation, right? So what about 9:18? Oh my God, incline thine ear and hear, open thine eyes and behold our desolations, current, present tense, for Daniel, which was back in, you know, the Babylonian era. And so it's, again, not the same time frame. But watch this, Daniel 9:26, we're now in the prophecy of the Messiah, starting in verse 25, explained before that by the angels, or the angel. But here in verse 26, after a certain amount of time, the Messiah will be cut off, but not for himself. He didn't sin, and therefore he's not dying for his own sin. He will save his people from their sins, but this Messiah will not be cut off for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city. Okay, the people of the prince. This prince is likely not the same prince as the Messiah. This is the prince of Rome, if you will, somebody who was their leader, personating, of course, the leader of the Messiah, because he was the prince of hosts, just like Jesus Christ is the prince of hosts as well. And so you have lots of personations with the Roman system and the system of God. Well, it says the people of the prince shall come and destroy the city and the sanctuary. So if it's destroyed, the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war, what? Desolations are determined. That's in verse 26. Notice verse 27. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, and from the overspreading of abominations shall make it, which is the city, desolate. Oh, wait a minute. This is, if you know the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9, you know that what it's doing, it's telling you that there's going to be a rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem, and the city is going to be made desolate. Okay, after that rebuilding, there's going to be in the midst of the week, the Messiah is going to be cut off, and then the city is going to become desolate. Now wait, Jesus was about to be killed in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And he was just at that time talking about a future tense time where they will see Jerusalem cut off and made desolate. So hey, Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, that must be the closest application we can come to with what's being talked about in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Because Jesus is referring to a future time with this Jerusalem being desolate, or the abomination of desolation. Now, what did Daniel just say in this prophecy, or really what was Gabriel saying, in this prophecy of what Daniel just heard in Daniel 9:27? Let's look again and see. When Jesus Christ shall confirm the covenant with many for this last week that was referred to in this 70-week prophecy. In the midst of that last week, he shall be cut off, and the sacrifice shall cease, so he's going to be killed. And because of, for the, this is the reason, for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate. Now, he being the, I would be okay if you understood that as the prince of the host in heaven or the prince of the Roman host on earth. Either way, I don't mind, but it seems that it's Christ that did it because he's the one that had the control over his people, and which had been committing major abominations, the overspreading of abominations. So for the overspreading of abominations that were being done in Jerusalem, he shall make it, Jerusalem, desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate, which happened, of course, in 70 AD, with the destruction from the Romans having surrounded the city and bringing it down to its bottom. Remember Matthew 24 at the beginning, where Jesus had been saying, look at these stones, look at these walls. Not one stone is going to be left upon another that will not be thrown down. And the reason why he was saying that was for the overspreading of the abominations. Now see, listen, if Jesus had seen his people accepting the Spirit of Truth, which was in him, and they were following the Spirit of Truth, willing to be his disciples, learning from him and being, you know, blessed by his ministry, then there wouldn't have been an overspreading of abominations. In fact, there would have been a casting out of abominations. There would have been great revival. The Spirit of Truth would have absorbed his people, and they would have absorbed the Spirit of Truth. There would have been unity and oneness, And Jerusalem never would have been destroyed, but for the overspreading of the abominations in his city, it was given over to the Roman hands and destroyed. Jesus was referring to the abominations, or abomination of desolation. When you see that, stand in the holy place. Now, Jesus was referring to, in Luke, that when Jerusalem was surrounded, okay? So, what does this mean? Well, there's a big, I think it's a big application. When God's holy place, that is supposed to be filled with holy people, is attacked and surrounded by civil authorities with the purpose of destroying, like genocide, completely wiping out that people, then you have what's called the abomination of desolation, in principle. Okay, that's what happened actually when the Romans surrounded the city of Jerusalem, and they destroyed it. They razed it to the ground. R-A-Z-E-D, not R-A-I-S-E-D. That's a different word there. And so what happened is Jesus is saying, when you're going to see Jerusalem having been given over to the abominations, when they're surrounded without my help, I will not protect them. When they have been given over to the enemy and they surround that and destroy it, you will know that the abomination of desolation has been set up. So now, that's the reality of what happened back in the day during the time of Jerusalem being destroyed. What is the application during the Dark Ages that we read about in Daniel chapter 8, verses like 11 through 13 and onward, and also what you read in Daniel 11:31, and I believe it was Daniel 12:11? Well, that's the same concept. You have God's people, who many of which have given over to the faith of the enemy because they're not willing to stand up for what God would have them to, which is truth, and they either apostatize or they give up their faith and, apostasy is a good word. Then what happens is God isn't able and he's not even been asked to protect them. So he backs off and God's people are completely surrounded with a civil authority or civil nation that wants to completely wipe them out. Now, didn't that happen in the Dark Ages? Didn't that happen in the Middle Ages? Like a long 1260 years that we learn about in Matthew 24 that is called the Great Tribulation, okay? So you have, by the way, check that out in the Desire of Ages. You'll find it. That Great Tribulation is actually referred to as the 1260 years. And when that's over, then Christ refers to the time when he's coming. And you can go through that and just piece it apart and realize that that's what's being talked about. So, the Great Tribulation. When you have that concept in the Dark Ages, you had that same concept in the time of Jerusalem being surrounded by the Romans. Is that going to happen again? Well, yeah, look at Revelation chapter 13 toward the end, which is the second beast, verses 11 through 18. And then look at also what happens at the very end of Revelation chapter 17, where, the 10 kings come together and they give their power unto the beast, and the beast is able to make war with the saints and try to overcome them, but they are with the Lamb. And so the Lamb overcomes them, and they that are with the Lamb are called, chosen, and faithful. So this whole war that's being described there is kind of the same thing. It's the abomination of desolation. What is it? Well, you have a lot of people that have gone into apostasy, and they've given over their strength and their authority over to the human, earthly, civil authorities, which then try to come around surrounding God's people to basically, like a genocide, just wipe them out. And that's what's going to be happening at the end of time just as well. So Revelation 13, Luke 7, Revelation 17 kind of fit into the end time scenario. So what is this? The abomination of desolation spoken of by Jesus in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 are dealing with the destruction of Jerusalem. It happened when they were surrounded by the Roman armies because of the apostasy in that city. Okay? A very similar thing happened during the Dark Ages. God's people had gone into apostasy. Just ask Paul, example, for in Acts chapter 20, where he said, from among your own people there will come forth ravening wolves that will feed upon the flock. Wait, from among you will come forth these people and lead apostles and disciples after themselves? Yeah, and that's what happened. You have what you would call the ecumenical movement. There were true people that were following Christ, and from them they left and they started other groups, and now you have the whole ecumenical movement, and that's what started the Roman church and all of, that whole apostasy that went on. And that was the apostasy of God's people that basically surrounded God's people and tried to destroy them like genocide. So you have that going over and over again in different places in history, but really the Bible focuses a lot in prophecy of the destruction of Jerusalem, the darkened Middle Ages, and then the end of time, which we haven't quite seen yet, but I will say, it is happening very rapidly around us. We're seeing the likes of the Mark of the Beast scenario set up right before our eyes. You can't go to the store unless, you can't be at your job unless, so what am I saying? You can't buy, and you can't make any money to be able to sell or buy, and so you won't be able to buy or sell unless, and the enemy is causing it to be very difficult to follow the principles of conscience when you're looking around you and seeing like, wait a minute, like, I mean, if I did this, it would be better, right? Well, frankly, no, it's not better, because people that are doing the are following the false health message, they continue to have to follow the false health message. It doesn't end. It won't end. You're going to continue getting deeper and deeper and deeper to where you're completely either ailing or you're dead or you're stuck somehow. Now, you're going to be stuck either way. So you're either going to be stuck on the Lord's side or you're going to be stuck on the enemy's side. So I rather would be stuck on the Lord's side, because if he's going to send, you know, like ravens to feed people, well, then I want to be faithful so that he'll send ravens to feed me. What about you? So the reality is we could either follow the health message of the world and try to, like, you know, follow after the little bit of that little carrot that he's putting in front of our faces that we're trying to grab at. Like, yeah, I want food. I want food. I want food. I can't really get enough because you're not letting me work because I can't, you know, this and that. Well, you could do that, or you could sit back, set yourselves, and see the salvation of the Lord with you. Judah and Jerusalem, fear not, nor be dismayed. For the Lord has not brought you out into the wilderness to kill you. So in all reality, we have this scenario of Jerusalem being destroyed, surrounded with the armies. And it is a microcosm of what happened in the Dark Ages and also what's going to be happening at the end of time. So what did happen during that time? Well, those that listened to Christ, when they saw that going on, okay, the armies came and surrounded. You could read about this in the first chapter of the Great Controversy. When the armies surrounded that city, well, everybody who knew better, they started praying, God, what do we do? Help us. And what's interesting is that army that surrounded them, I think it was in 67, they pulled back and they left for about 3 years. Well, it was immediately that God's people who believed Christ's words, they left. They left rapidly. Well, it was at that point where some of the radicals of the Jewish nation, they having, you know, chased after these people that left and actually did them quite a bit of harm, they came back. And if they would have seen anybody trying to escape, like the Christians at that time, they would have killed them too. But those Christians, they left immediately. They didn't wait around for 2 or 3 years, you know, for this and that. And, you know, it's getting a little bit better. They left. They did what God had asked them to. And not a single Christian died 3 years later in the final destruction of AD 70 when Titus came around and destroyed Jerusalem, because they had listened to Christ right away. So the principle for us is, if you know to do something that's right, do what is right and leave the consequences with God. He'll protect you. He will bless you. Now, sometimes that can be difficult. There's a lot of things, a lot of opportunities, a lot of options. And we just have to be just as diligent in prayer and searching as we possibly can. God will be faithful to us. He will lead us. He will not lead us into the wilderness to forsake us. Now, sometimes he leads us into the wilderness, but it's not to kill his people. He leads us there to give us the manna from heaven, to give us the water from the rock, to give us all those wonderful gifts that he provided for those people, manna coming down for 40-something years. Now, they complained about it all the time. We don't have any bread but this manna. Well, that is bread, and you just said you didn't have any bread, so what's wrong with that, right? Because you're just grumbling about everything. Well, we don't want to be like those people. We want to try to learn from what is right. And, of course, the ultimate right was demonstrated by Jesus Christ. So we have some description here in Matthew chapter 24. I'm going to go back to it real quick. And we can see that in Matthew 24, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whosoever readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Okay? So that's the call, right? And that's exactly what Mark said. We're going to read it to when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel. Then let them be in Judea flee into the mountains. Okay, that's just what Luke said too. When you shall see Jerusalem compassed, know that the desolation is near. Then let them which are in Judea flee into the mountains. Oh, okay, so Jesus had made a call for people to leave when they see that the city surrounded and go into the mountains. So those that listened, they were the ones that were blessed. Okay, that's what's really important. We need to listen to the word of God. If you have left anything in the house, don't go get it. If you're in the field, don't even turn back to get your clothes. Okay, Mark says a similar thing. Let him that is on the housetop, don't even go down to the house, neither enter therein. Don't even go into the house to get anything. He that is in the field or out working to go back into the house, don't let him do it. Don't even get his garment. And very similar in Luke as well. You can see, let not them which are in the countries or in the field enter therein too. So depart out. Go away from your homes. Do it immediately. Okay, so Matthew, Mark, and Luke are all consistent there. Woe unto them that are with children in those days. There is a time where it's best not to continue on with families because you can look around logically. You can look around in reality. You can take a break for a moment, step back and say, do I want my kids to be educated the way that this world is educating kids now? Do I want my kids to have to be, you know, following the false health message to be able to go into work and to continue on living the normal life? What's the deal here? Should I even have a family at this time? Or should I be wise, like Christ has said, and understand that there is a time where woe to you that have children at this time? I'm just saying there are some things that we really need to consider as new families at this point, whether we should go one direction or not. Now, this is a huge thing that I'm saying. I get that. I recognize. But these are the words of Jesus. This is not my words. Let's go and now see what Mark said about it. Mark said, but woe to them which are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. What days? When the nations are surrounding God's people and making it very difficult for them to do anything. That's really what it is. Now it says in Luke 21, for these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days, for there shall be great distress in the land, and wrath upon this people. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led captive away into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles. And that's really what the abomination of desolation was here described. This is the interpretation. Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So Luke really refers to Jerusalem instead of just this concept of abominations. Luke goes into the application and says Jerusalem will be trodden down. That's when the abomination of desolation will be set up, when at this time Jerusalem is trodden down and the Gentiles will have their time. And so those are the verses I wanted to go over during this time, but it's just fascinating to me how you can see that these three major times in history, the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, the Dark Ages, and of course what's coming in the very near future. I don't think we have very long. I'm not a prophet. I cannot foretell. But it's getting more difficult all the way around the world. I don't have to ask you guys in Australia whether it's becoming more difficult or not. And so, you know, where are we right now? Where are we in history? Where are we in prophecy? I think we're at the very toenails of the image of Daniel chapter 2. We are right on the cusp of the mark of the beast and the seal of God. It's going to be amazing. God is going to do wonderful things, but at the same time, it's going to be very difficult. We need to realize that it's going to be good for some and hard for others. But in all things, we need to keep our head up. That's what Christ said in the book of Luke. Keep your head up, for you know that your redemption is drawing near, right? So thank the Lord for the book of Matthew, for the book of Mark, for the book of Luke, teaching us to go back and to study Daniel. And you can see the principles, especially in the first chapter of the Great Controversy. You can see the principles of what happened during the destruction of Jerusalem and try to recognize how that can apply to your life. So if you need anything to do, homework would be to read again the first chapter of the Great Controversy to try to understand a little bit more of what Jesus was referring to in the destruction of Jerusalem. And then, of course, there's another one in the Desire of Ages. I believe it's chapter 69 at the Mount of Olives, I think it is. Anyways, may God bless us that we, even in the tough times, or when things are going well for us. Either way, may we always be faithful. May we always have that heart, that mind, that wants the mind of Christ, that wants the Spirit of Christ, that we will fulfill His will in our lives here on this earth. That's my desire, and I hope it's yours. Let's pray together, asking for God to continue to lead us to have that same conviction and to be a blessing to as many as possible. So let's bow our heads. Our Father in heaven, I want to thank you for giving us this time and pray that you would please lead and guide us, that we can understand a little bit more of what it is that you're saying to your people. I pray that you would help our lives to be a glory to you in the good times and or in the bad. I recognize that your Son was talking directly to his disciples, saying that it's going to be ugly. But there's a lot of good things too, so we ask that you would help us to see both. As Romans 9 says, to behold both the goodness and the severity of God. Maybe it's 11, I don't remember. But I pray you would lead and guide us that we can know and be prepared for whatever you choose for us to go through. We know that you have not given us any temptation beyond what we are able to receive, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that we may be able to bear it. So thank you for these promises, and keep us that we can glorify you in both good and in bad times. We thank you for this in Jesus' holy name. Amen.
All right, anybody have any thoughts? Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, thank you, Brother Daniel. The abomination of desolation has stumped me for a long time because I do my own Zooms on Daniel Revelation. And SDAs have been teaching the abomination of desolation probably different ways, like, you know, the mass, the false mass of the Catholic Church, taking away the daily, all that sort of thing. So what you just said makes a lot more sense, because the mass has been around for a long time. So the abomination of desolation probably can't be the mass, because it's been around. Right. So you're saying it's the when we see all these things happening and the Gentiles are treading down our rights and things like that, that makes a little bit more sense to me. So,
well, praise God.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Praise the Lord. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. And if I could add to that, if you don't mind. Remember the guy in Jerusalem for 7 years had a message.
Right.
And that message was pretty strong, because it was well noted in the Bible that, you know, that he did this. The unfortunate thing about it, he didn't take heed of his own message. He also died in that onslaught.
Right.
There's a parallel to that with the message that the Adventists have always had, and that's get out of the cities. They've understood these messages for hundreds of years, since our early forefathers, the message of getting out of the cities, where they leave it really to the last little bit of. And there's all complaints. We can't get out. The price of things are so dear, and God isn't, you know, that my job and this, I can't do this, I can't do that. I don't know how to grow vegetables. It's the same parallel. I see it. If we're not heeding what we believe, we're going to be stuck, and there's a sudden destruction coming our way if we're not heeding to all the messages that we've been given.
Right.
A lot more into that. There can be a complete sermon on that one. But the reality is, if we're preaching one thing and doing another, we're no different.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Well said. I see there's a couple of comments real quick. And Satan is trying to hinder the gospel, right? Sabbath blessings to all. Good. Go ahead, ladies.
I was just saying, well, we thank you again for sharing with us this day. And if there are no more comments or anything, we can close. But if you have thoughts, yeah, come forward and don't be shy.
Yeah, I have a quick question on fleeing into the mountains. You know, at the time when the Christians left Jerusalem in AD 66, they didn't flee to the mountains, they flee to Pella. And Pella is located at the foot of the mountains in the Jordan Valley. So, you know, the word mountain, a lot of people would take it as like, well, you know, we've got to go to a mountain. But I'm inclined to think mountains. Mountains is like a place of refuge, you know. We should all flee to God, I think. That's what Jesus is saying. You know, get your act together and come back to me. Because there are many places where there are no mountains, and the people, flee to Pella, which is really not a mountain. And how do we really, you know, interpret that? You know, in the prophecy of Zechariah chapter 14, during the earthquake, the great earthquake at Uzziah's time, the people were also told to flee. Yes. But flee to the valley of the mountains, they said, not the mountains.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really quite understand this mountain interpretation. Maybe some of us may have a better feel on it.
I always understood it as physically running away. That's why we told not to bother about coming down from the roof and getting out and stuff. Don't waste time. I actually always thought that it was a physical getaway from, even from the countryside, to run.
I've agreed. I think sounds good. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point our brother makes, because the children of Israel were taken to the wilderness, not so much the mountains, for refuge. So we could go to the wilderness, but the mountains is also beautiful as well. So it's wherever God leads us, I think, as long as we get out of the trouble.
Right.
A good example of this, remember when Cain killed Abel and then Seth was brought forth? The curse was put on Cain, and the multitude that the lineage of Cain and the lineage of Seth, there was always meant to be a distinction between the two groups. The lineage of Cain, they lived in the valleys, in the low parts, which you could call the wilderness too as well. Whereas Seth's lineage was always meant to live in the mountains and the crests and the valleys, not the crests and the mountains itself. They were to be completely separated. The problem is Seth's lineage started looking down and seeing what was going on with Cain's and all the parties and all the rest of it, and started mingling. So a good viewpoint for Seth's group was to be able to see what was going on and warn their own people. So you can't see that in the valleys. You can't see what's going up in the mountains itself. Whereas the mountains has a tall tale scenic view, and they are the signs that we should be, you know, looking for. And we can do that right throughout the Bible itself. As an eagle, the eye is in at the highest point. Well, I see a very distinction between that and Jerusalem itself. When we get out, we need to be in a viewpoint that we know what's going on. My thoughts, maybe someone's different.
Sounds good to me.
Daniel, anyone else here? Should we flee the SDA church, I mean the actual gathering, if we realize that the doctrine that is being preached in the church is not consistent with the doctrine of Christ? Should we stay in that church or should we flee? Because someone asked this question some time ago and say, Well, the disciples didn't altogether leave the temple. They were most of the time in the temple, even though Israel had gone way, way far from God. But Paul was mentioned several times to be in the temple. The disciples were always in the temple. So if we see that the church is being absolutely turned around and not going according to the doctrine of Christ, should we stay in that church or should we flee from the church as well?
Good thoughts. Anybody have any comments?
You know, testimonies to ministers is pretty clear. And it refers to the world uniting, the church uniting with the world itself. And we've seen that go on for many years. And the spirit of prophecy actually calls it a cage of birds, a foul cage. Well, how's it go?
A cage of unclean birds.
Say it again.
A cage of unclean birds.
That's it. A cage of unclean birds.
Foul.
I think the word foul actually gets in it. You become the what it's basically saying, you become a daughter to Babylon, which means there's a problem. And I can vouch for my own readings of the spirit of prophecy. Ellen White actually wasn't part of the so-called GC towards the end. She was warning about these sort of things. So we have those sort of things before us right now. So I couldn't go. Look, the information that I have today, especially on the Father and Son movement, and the problem is a lot of the Father and Son movement stays at that level and doesn't grow. And when you start to understand the first and second and third angels' messages, as our forefathers had, and gain that experience, you won't want to go back to a corporation that they see it as a church, a ship that will go through, because it certainly won't. We've got to have that experience, as our forefathers did with the first, second, third angels' messages, to have Revelation 18, the fourth angel's message, take place, the loud cry. You can't do that while you're surrounded by doctrinal bad stuff, bad doctrines. Right. So it's not about condemning the church. It's understanding where the church is at and what God constitutes a church to be is very important. And I think, I believe personally, if we continue to rub our shoulders in the same denomination that we see is wrong, and has been changed from its original intent, I think God will hold us responsible as individuals. Strong words, but I believe God actually will hold us responsible for engaging our kids, the influences of a church that has turned its back on God's proper truths. Right. The Philadelphia church had a door that was open to them. The Laodicea church has a door that's closed to him with Christ knocking on it and saying, can I come in?
Exactly. That's what I mean. Cannot. And when I was in the church, I thought, I have to stay. Who's going to witness to them? In the end, it was doing my head in. I could not stay any longer. So God prompts us to do what he wants. I'm not telling you to get out. Saying that was for me, I couldn't stay there any longer. And when I got out, more truths began to open up. While I was in there, you know, I was stagnant. So that's my experience anyway.
Charlie, common saying is stick around a dog long enough and you'll catch its fleas. You've got to clean yourself up.
Charlie had his hand up, or Shanti, whichever one.
Yeah, I believe the bottom line to this mountain question would be we need to be separated from all the abomination that is happening in the church, in the SDA church. And as the fourth angel tells us, you know, we need to come out of Babylon. And it's a very difficult thing to do, very, very difficult thing for people to give up all they have. You know, they grew up in the church, they have all the friends in the church, and they believe what the leaders are telling them to come out. But desperately, we need to come out. Just like Lot, he has to come out. you know, just like Noah's time, you know, has to come out. And I think that's exactly what it is. We cannot be unequally yoked with what is being preached in the church today. And we need to sound the message to come out of Babylon and be separated.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
I think God has a way to bring us out if at this time there are certain people who are still like maintaining the loyalty in the church, but with the certain circumstances that is being brought upon us as the unvaxxed now. So it is actually not that we want to come out anymore, but it's like we are being pushed out.
Mm.
See, you see how God works in mysterious ways. We don't want to get out, but God says, okay, I will use Satan's snares. He says you cannot go to church if you do not, you are unvaccinated. Okay, then you don't go to church. Then you stay out, you know. You don't want to come out, but, you know, how Satan really, how God really uses negative events to bring out all the positive consequences, which we would not do on our own free will.
Yeah.
Wonderful, isn't it?
It's like the two angels that dragged Lot and the family out of Sodom.
Yeah. Flee out of...
Just another thought, you know. When you read statements like, we have more to fear within than we have without, that in itself, even amongst everyone here on Zoom today, only God knows where we're heading as a personal relationship with Him. Only God knows our intent. We don't know we could all say the right thing within here now. All say the right thing, and we all agree in. But in the end, when the pressure's put on, we have more to fear within our own groups, those we associate with, than those outside of the church would probably understand better than us. So unless we're completely growing in stature and our character, which reflects the law of God, and that's what Christ did, reflect the law of God, unless we're doing that and have our eyes fixed on Christ, we will have those issues within our own groups too as well.